everybody. Brian Alvarez here on a brand new edition of After Dark Radio here at brianalvarez.com. Joined as we are every week by Carl Stern. Going to be a fun show tonight. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Carl's got a theme this evening. Also going to talk about a lot of news. Got some email questions here and a lot more. And Carl, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's a very stormy day here in Alabama, as April usually is. And want to make mention of thoughts with the people in Jackson, Mississippi. Apparently they've had a very severe tornado down there and may have had some deaths and stuff. So it's a very stormy day here across the Deep South.
Wanted to send out a couple of notes here. We are going to have a guest hopefully next week. I know I'd promised one this week, but there were a couple of things that had to be accomplished before this guest could come on, and we're in the middle of working on those right now. But we're planning a show about hauntings. Got a couple of other guests that are in the works as well. And again, everybody listening to this right now, this is your show. I'm trying to make sure that everybody is involved in this. So if you, listening to this right now, think that you have an interesting topic to discuss, or you have a, you know, some sort of area of expertise that might be of interest to the listeners, drop me a line, brianalvarezafterdark@gmail.com, and we'll work on getting you on the program. We obviously cover a lot of different things here on this show. It's not just Bigfoot, UFOs. We're going to talk some science today. But I'm interested in a lot of different topics. So if you have something that you find interesting that you, I don't know if you necessarily have to cover it as part of your job or anything like that, but just an area of expertise that perhaps you're interested in and have a lot of knowledge about, then drop us a line and we'll work it out to get you on the show. So anyway, Carl, today, before we get into the topic of the day, which is time, I wanted to go over a couple of news notes. I know you've got some emails as well. And we're not going to make this the subject of the show today because I just have really started looking this over and it's been a busy last couple of weeks and I haven't really had the time to devote to it that I would have liked to. But have you taken a look at the FBI vault that has, I guess, just recently been opened up on the internet, vault.fbi.gov, where you can basically go in and look at thousands of declassified documents on a number of subjects. Just very quickly here, there are documents on counterterrorism, foreign counterintelligence, fugitives, hot topics, and down here near the bottom, unexplained phenomenon. You had a chance to check out any of that?
No, I haven't, but I've been I have seen several, news reports about it being opened up, but I haven't got a chance to get in there and explore yet myself. But this could be fascinating or much to do about nothing. Have you had a chance to look around in there yet?
Well, there were a couple of articles. There was an article we talked about, I think, on last week's show about, I guess there was an FBI document where they were discussing rumors of a crashed alien craft. You remember we talked about this. It was right around the time of Roswell, how interesting that was. And my theory was that they were investigating stories that somebody had heard. And I just found it interesting, the idea that, you know, apparently there were rumors about crashed craft in the New Mexico area long before Roswell, the Roswell story came to the forefront of, I guess, the UFO community in, like, the late 70s. I thought that was very interesting, but I didn't necessarily see it as a document confirming that there had been a crash or anything like that. So there was another article that came out that's actually on the front page of brianalvarez.com right now, talking about another document, 8,000 cows abducted. And it was about cattle mutilations, basically. And what was interesting about this particular document was that basically the government had absolutely no idea what was happening with cattle mutilations. And I guess now would be as good a time to talk about this as anything. When you read these documents, Carl, or you hear about them, obviously, if you read the one about the cattle mutilations right here, I mean, you read through the document and it's pretty clear that during the period where you know, your average person on the street that heard about cattle mutilations didn't know what was going on, and there were a lot of theories about it, perhaps, you know, perhaps the government is involved, perhaps UFOs are involved, perhaps Satanists are involved. And there were, of course, the group of people that thought that, that our government had to be involved. And meanwhile, here's this document, and it's pretty clear from reading it that the government has absolutely no idea what's going on. You know, they're looking at, man, you know, there are rumors that there are Satanists involved. You know, it appears these cows have been lifted by helicopters and mutilated and then put back and dropped. And, you know, when you read the documents, it appears the government also, like the public, had absolutely no idea what was going on here. And I guess that begs the question, Carl. You know, some people are going to say, this is proof that whatever's happening with cattle mutilations, our government doesn't know what's going on. And there's going to be another group of people that are going to read this and go, you know, all of these documents that are released, this is a misinformation campaign. They're trying to make you believe that they don't know what's going on with any of this either. But in reality, they do. So, long story short, where do you fall in this argument?
Cattle mutilation, to me, is one of the more interesting of the unexplained phenomenon out there. Because, much like the FBI, apparently, I have no idea what's going on with cattle mutilation. You know, on the surface, you look at the most popular explanations. One is the government, and you know, the term black helicopters are spawned from cattle mutilation. The supposed, you know, sightings of black helicopters near cattle mutilations, and that became kind of the pop culture catchphrase for any type of conspiracy sort of government involved thing. So, you know, it's even crossed over into popular culture, these cattle mutilations. And so what does the government have to gain by mutilating cattle? I have no idea. Nothing, obviously. The government could easily get their hands on as many cattle as they wanted to get their hands on. I don't know why they would have to take black helicopters and mutilate cattle. You talk about, you know, the next most popular theory would be, of course, alien experimentation or something. Why are they just picking cows, of all things? None of this makes any sense. Just complete, and we've discussed this here on the show before, how, you know, some of this absolutely can be natural animal killings and so forth, even though it looks sometimes surgically precise, and there have been, I think, very valid explanations of why the natural process is going on would make it look like that. But, you know, at the same time, there's a lot of this stuff that's been reported, and a lot of it is highly unusual, and I just don't know what to make of cattle mutilations. Now, of course, as you know, I work for the government, and even though I work on a local level, I still work for the government, and they operate essentially the same way. When you talk about misinformation, does that go on? Probably so. I don't see a lot of misinformation on a local level, but what I do see a lot of is moments caught in time, snapshots that don't tell the whole story. I've often made the joke that here in a relatively small town where I work as a police officer, of course, a lot of the bigger calls and stuff, the murders and really bad traffic accidents and stuff like that, I do have some involvement in the investigation of those things. And I often make the quip that, sometimes after I get done working on this, I have to go and buy a copy of our local paper to see what they say happened, because it usually does not even close to match the story. And a lot of times that has to do with, you know, sensationalism and speculation and reading between the lines and people wanting to make the story more dramatic than it really is, and what ends up getting put out there as the public, and especially now with the internet being so prevalent, you get everybody's opinion of what's going on is not really based around the facts, and the government is secretive about things, and at times you have to be. When you're involved in investigations and stuff, you don't want to play your ace card and let them know what you're holding, because that becomes important. And so that, again, I think a lot of people view that as being shady and underhanded, and it should all be above, you know, it should all be in the light. You should see everything. Well, that's not practical to police investigations a lot of times, to play your whole hand. And so that, you know, if you're sitting on the sidelines, you don't know how these things work, and you know that City Hall, and there we go, we got an alarm going off for more bad weather. But anyway, you get this idea that, you know, the government's sneaking around doing all this stuff, and it's shadowy, and it's dark and scary, and a lot of times it's just business. It's just the way things need to be to get anything done. And so misinformation, yeah, I'm sure probably on a higher level, on a national level, there is some misinformation out there, but I don't think that's necessarily the goal behind it every time, if that makes any sense.
It's funny you should mention FBI agents lurking around and it being mysterious and that sort of thing. You often hear these stories where, you know, something strange happens and then there's reports there were FBI agents around and people are like, you know, oh my God, you know, either the government is involved or the government is really interested in this and that sort of thing. And in these documents, you know, there's a report which basically indicates that the FBI investigated these reports due to requests from the people whose cows were abducted. So, in other words, you know, and granted, you can read this in many different ways, but according to the government, the reason that there were FBI agents milling around after abductions was because the people whose animals were abducted called the FBI and they said, can you come out here and find out what's wrong with my cows? As opposed to the FBI, maybe, you know, they were responsible or they heard about it and got out there as fast as they could because they wanted to investigate. These were actually requests from the individuals that asked the FBI to come out and check these things out, which really is not all that strange, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's absolutely. A lot of this stuff, again, it's that's not as much fun of an answer, though, as the, you know, FBI's mutilating cattle. Again, and, you know, there are a lot of government conspiracy theorists out there. I mean, they look unhappy with the way things are going, maybe not happy with, or very much, you know, against whatever political party's in power or against what you know, the other side. And so they build these things up for their own gain, to play one side against the other. And so, of course, you know, anything that looks suspicious, you know, the government is a good scapegoat. But I can tell you from personal experience, sometimes we're standing around scratching our heads just like everybody else. You know, you're dropped in the middle of, you know, something that does not compute, and it's happened to me more than once. You're standing there looking at just take, for instance, a wreck scene. Sometimes you weren't there and didn't see the accident, yet you're standing in the middle of the road in the middle of the night, and these cars, it makes no rational explanation how these vehicles got where they are. And, you know, did they fall out of the sky? Did a helicopter drive? Well, obviously, you know, that didn't happen, but it defies explanation how these vehicles got in the position they're in. And you take that to, now that's just an everyday mundane kind of situation, but you take and put that in the middle of a cow pasture somewhere, and this looking around and going, this does not compute, how did this happen? I can totally see how, you know, this stuff's confusing. I mean, when you're dropped in fresh on a situation, you weren't there to witness it, and you've just got to put together things that don't make sense. It's sometimes hard, if not impossible, to do, and you just come up with the best answer you can come up with. Sometimes there is no best answer, and that's the stuff that seems to leave people really guessing. And, you know, cattle mutilation to me absolutely fits in that, because no explanation I can think of explains what's going on there.
So I'm looking through this vault, and when you click on unexplained phenomenon, there's a number of different subjects here that are documented by the FBI. There's Project Blue Book, which actually was an official government project investigating UFO sightings. There's extrasensory perception. I haven't looked through a lot of these yet. Animal mutilation, which we just talked about. Roswell UFO. National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomenon. And then there's a section on Majestic 12. And I thought, huh, And Carl, you are aware of the Majestic 12 documents, I presume?
A little bit.
Majestic 12 documents are a series of documents that were released in the early 90s. And, you know, for a long time, it was, you know, there was great debate about whether or not these documents were real. And basically, Majestic 12 was supposedly a group of 12 individuals that were established by special classified executive order of President Truman to basically investigate UFOs and their occupants. And there's a list of names here. And of course, when the documents came out, it just happened that all of the 12 men involved happened to be dead. Which of course makes it awfully hard to confirm or deny their involvement in this supposed secret government organization if they are all dead. And the Majestic 12 documents, you know, they claim on June 24th, 1947, talks about the, you know, the Kenneth Arnold sightings. And then as you scroll further down into the document, it talks about crash of an object, retrieval of an object, bodies, the whole nine yards. So obviously, if this were a real document, that would be quite the story there. That, my God, these documents were discovered. They were mailed anonymously to an individual. That's how they were first discovered. They didn't show up in a vault or anything like this. And as noted, there was a great deal of argument about whether or not they were real or whether or not they were you know, a hoax document of some sort. So anyway, the FBI claims that they're bogus. And if you go into the vault right here, you could actually read the entire Majestic 12 document. And written on the document in giant letters is bogus. So they're claiming that none of these documents are legitimate. However, I've not read all of this, but I did read a very interesting deal here. In this presentation they have on the Majestic 12 documents, which they determine are bogus, these documents are not real, it does read here, based on Department of Defense representations made to such and such here, which is blacked out, which, and this is a quote, incredibly tended to buttress a portion of the document. This matter was discussed with DAD Brandon, blah, blah, blah. Interesting thing here is that, according to this, there is a portion of these documents which are supported by other information that the FBI has. It does not say which portion of the documents they basically found important enough that they needed to investigate. I guess essentially what it's saying is that there are portions of this document that are security breaches, and obviously when they discovered this, while they found the majority of the document to be bogus, there were portions of the document that were apparently legitimate, and I don't know what portions of those were, but that is really interesting.
Yeah, and again, it is quite comical. Every single page, it seems, has in black magic marker the word bogus written directly across it, and there's a lot of course, blacked out stuff in here, it appears. I've downloaded this for reading later on the iPad because, gosh, it is fairly fascinating, and I'm looking forward to reading into that, what I can read of it.
I think we should do a, on this program over the next several weeks, there are 8 topics here under unexplained phenomenon, and maybe over the next 8 weeks we should get reading and do one per week. So maybe start with Majestic 12 last week and just get your thoughts on the original documents, which they claim are bogus. And actually, if you do a lot of reading, I mean, people have spent like large portions of their lives trying to make arguments for and against these documents, and you know, I think the feeling among most UFO investigators is that they are bogus, but there are still individuals who are clinging to this idea and firmly believe that these documents are legitimate. So maybe we can investigate that and talk a little bit about that on the show next week. But those are all up, everybody, at vault.fbi.gov. And if you head up to the website, If you head over to the right-hand side of the page under Vault Links, under Categories, down there, if you click on Unexplained Phenomenon, you can go right to the Majestic 12 documents that we're talking about today, and maybe you can read over those as well, and you'll have a better idea of what we're going to be talking about potentially on next week's show. So, Carl, you had an email you wanted to read here this week.
Yeah, I've actually, I believe I've got a couple. The first one comes from John the Icelander. He writes, this is kind of a follow-up to something we were talking about on the Guide Stones episode. He says, just started listening to you and Brian on After Dark. Great show so far. I heard the Georgia Guide Stones talk about a universal language, and you guys mentioned that English is fairly universal at this point. That is true. In fact, more people are fluent in English than any other language if you count native speakers and second language speakers. However, there was a constructed language, and I believe this is pronounced Esperanto, which was designed to bring cultures together and ease communication worldwide. According to proponents of the language, most people should be able to master Esperanto and be fluent in it in about 2 months. I actually have a friend that tested this and managed to learn it quite well in a short time span. Brian, have you ever heard of this or know anything about Esperanto?
I do not.
Yeah, me either, but apparently, just from what I've looked up on the web about it, it is, in fact, a constructed language. It's been tagged as an international auxiliary language. And apparently it is Latin-based, and they do claim to be able to master it in a fairly short period of time. They have an example on the Wikipedia page for this of a document which says it is written in Esperanto, and I can make neither heads nor tails out of it. It looks like it's maybe Eastern European type alphabet system. It's very interesting. So if anyone knows, perhaps can suggest some reading material in English about Esperanto, I'd certainly like to check it out. Apparently, there was this got a lot of traction in the early 20th century and was being spread throughout Europe, and a lot of the people who had learned it and were speaking it were killed during World War II and the Holocaust, and apparently Hitler had something to do with trying to exterminate people who were propagating this language. So it looks like it has a pretty interesting history. I have one other email here, and it's kind of random, but I thought it would fit in better with this show than the others I do. It says, it's from Alan, and he says, due to the latest earthquakes that have been in the news, and my aunt got worried and paid about $150 for an earthquake survival pack that has a hand crank generator and water purification tablets. I want to assemble one for myself, so what do you suggest? As a fan of survivalism type shows, what are good brands of water purification tablets, and would I need a hand crank power generator? I would suggest really any type of water purification pill that contains iodine. That would be a must-have for any type of kit like that. And as far as a hand crank generator, not really. You're in a situation like that where you're going to have extensive damage to the infrastructure. You're not going to be so much worried about electricity anyway. I would suggest a more like a hand crank radio, even a shortwave radio, something like that. And they're prevalent out there now, these handshake flashlights that are powered by shaking them back and forth, and they produce an electrical charge. They're not very bright, but they seem to last pretty much forever. So I would suggest those. And again, that was kind of random, but it certainly, I think, fit our show, this show, better than some of the others.
A couple of things from my end. First off, somebody did mention, after listening to the Georgia Guidestones show, when we were talking about keeping the population below 500 million, and you suggested that that was perhaps a typo, someone did note that they are translated in 8 languages, so it would have had to been a typo on 8 different guidestones or 8 different translations. Front
yeah,
and back
I got a couple of emails on that same thing too, and
yeah.
Apparently that is quite widespread in sort of New World Order literature. Is the 500 million? So I guess that is probably correct.
And also an email here. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because I know you wanted to speak of time. But this is something that perhaps we can go into more depth on a different show. But Eric here in Rhode Island says, what are your thoughts and or opinions on demonic possession and exorcisms? Do you feel there are true cases out there? Can it be explained away as something else? Of any that you may have seen on TV shows or specials, do you feel that any of those held any validity? I wanted to largely ask you about this because, quite frankly, I live in Seattle. I am quite a ways away from the Bible Belt. We don't have churches here where men handle snakes, for example. And, you know, I would guess that if you asked most people in my area about demonic possession, you'd have probably about 98% of people saying that it's most likely psychological illnesses. And I would guess that even those in the clergy would say that, those that even believe in exorcism, I would say that they would probably suspect that 90% of supposed cases of possession are actually mental illnesses. But you're always going to have some people that are saying, you know, there are a small number of cases that are tough to explain. So I want to get your thoughts on that. And I will say also, before I get into your thoughts, that for those of you that have ever seen the movie The Exorcist, the original, the 73, 74, whenever it was, that film came out, I've seen that movie, and I've read the book. And let me just say that the book is, like, so ridiculously good. It's, like, 100 times better than the film. So if you've never seen the movie, or if you have seen the movie and have not had a chance to read the book, if exorcisms or possession or that sort of thing interests you even in the slightest, it's not a true story, but it's really good. So I would check out The Exorcist, the book, if you've never had a chance to do so and you're interested in this sort of thing. But go ahead, Carl.
Well, the thing about discussing demonic possession is it's difficult on a show like this because you kind of have to pick a side of the fence to be on. And I know there are a lot of people here who don't necessarily subscribe to certain religious beliefs and whatever. And so it's kind of a difficult topic to suggest outside the realm. I mean, you've either got to fall on one side of the fence or the other on this. And haven't done a lot of religious studies in my life, and having a considerable amount of education in kind of fundamentalist type evangelical religious circles, I can best say that the predominant view within most of your evangelical Christian denominations nowadays is that demonic possession is largely no longer a case. A lot of the stuff is now recognized as mental illness, but if you fall on the side of the fence that demonic possession really did happen back in biblical times and so forth, that it is no longer prevalent today is largely the I guess the majority view now, but again, you got to pick a religion, you got to pick a subset of that religion to even really discuss this, because the first thing that entails is a belief in demons to begin with, much less the ability of those demons to possess a human soul, and then you get into the whole argument: does the soul even exist? And that just opens a whole can of worms there. So again, you know, it's not as easy to answer on the surface as it would appear to be. There's a whole set of sub questions that you've got to adhere to first before you can kind of get into that.
Well, you can also look at it a little more simplistically in the sense that, you know, does a person believe that it is possible for a human being to be possessed by something otherworldly? Doesn't necessarily have to be the devil or whatever the case might be. It can be anything. So I guess that's kind of, you know, you can be less specific about it and discuss it in that way if that's something that you want to do. But I will say in terms of people that, I guess, whether you believe in it or not, I'm just going to say this. And I actually, you know, I don't really have much of a thought one way or the other, to be honest with you about this. But I will say that I am skeptical. How can I say this? The whole idea that back in the day, people were possessed regularly, but nowadays it's largely mental illness. To me, I don't buy that for like a second. Because let's just say that you believe that if you are possessed, it is by the devil. You know, I don't know why the devil was so much more, you know, why was he so much more active back in the day? And today he's far less active. You know, I kind of look at it the same way that I look of ancient reports of UFOs or, you know, let's say people at one point thought they were seeing fairies or such. You know, I don't believe that like UFOs suddenly started visiting the Earth in 1947. If you believe that UFOs exist, then I believe that all of these reports of strange aerial phenomenon going all the way back to the beginning are probably the same thing. What they are, I don't really know. But, you know, I the idea that, you know, back in the day they were dragons, and then a little bit later on they were, I don't know, hairy comets or whatever, and nowadays they're UFOs, and, you know, maybe today you'll be arguing that they're time travelers, you know. I think whatever they are, it's got to be consistent. So I believe that if you feel that 99% of cases of supposed possession are mental illness, then I think that going back, you've got to believe that a lot of the historical cases that maybe in the Bible or elsewhere were listed as demonic possession, I think that you've got to believe that those were mental illness as well, and vice versa. You know,
well,
if you,
I can tell you that as coming from an evangelical background, I can tell you there is a very complex answer for the question you just posed that would the time constraints of this program would not even begin to allow me to get into. But let's just say they got an answer for that. So.
All right. I need to have a show on this then.
You need to read a book.
Well, that's probably true as well. But all right, that'll be the subject for another day. Today's subject, however, is time travel. I guess time travel. Time in general. So, Carl, I guess set the stage.
Well, time is, to me, one of the most fascinating fields of scientific study because since the, I guess, exploration of quantum physics and Einstein and some of the things he started delving into on the quantum level, our understanding of time has drastically changed. Turns out that for the majority of human history, we have viewed time as a really kind of a man-made construct, a thing that we use just to mark the progression of events. Turns out, not so much so. Time is, in fact, a scientific phenomenon and does, in fact, exist. And more challenging is time is, in fact, not consistent. Time can be affected just like any other type of energy. It can be affected predominantly by two things, speed and gravity. Both speed and gravity have been scientifically tested and proven to bend, warp, slow, or speed up time. And that opens a lot of possible theories, time travel, of course, being one of them. But not necessarily time travel is a kind of, well, it is very interesting to me, and then I noticed a couple of articles up at BrianAlvarez.com about, you know, teleportation and things of that nature. A lot of that is again related to quantum physics and time. One of the things that Einstein proposed that I do not necessarily agree with, but I'm not Einstein, but it did come out that, you know, other fringe scientists, I'll say at this point, also are beginning not to agree with, is that there is a speed limit for the universe, and that is the speed of light. And the reason behind that is because energy cannot travel any faster than that. A light is a pure form of energy, has a speed limit, apparently. The problem that has been posed, however, is that that, too, is also relative on the quantum level. Let me give you an analogy of kind of how to wrap your head around it. Let's say, Brian, you are standing on the side of a railroad track, and there is a train coming at you moving the speed of light. And on that train, there's a flat bed, and I'm standing on that bed with, let's say, Vinny, and we're throwing a baseball back and forth. Well, on that bed, the baseball is traveling back and forth between myself and Vinny at, 40, 50 miles an hour. However, how fast is that baseball traveling toward Brian, who is standing there observing this train coming by at the speed of light? Well, that poses a problem because the apparent answer is the ball is traveling faster than the speed of light if it's going toward Brian as the train moving at the speed of light passes him by. So this produces a problem. The theory of relativity and quantum physics say that the ball can't travel any faster, but in fact, relatively, it actually possibly can. So this opened up a lot of speculation from different quantum scientists. How do you work around this sort of problem? And not just that, but other things. What do you do when the speed of light, if it can go around a supermassive black hole with just the most incredible amount of gravity you can have? So it goes around this and it slows it down and bends it. Well, it can also speed it up. So what's happening there? Well, time travel is what's happening there because time has also been bent. And there became an interesting theory that I thought I came up with this on my own. So I kind of threw it out there to a couple people who worked at the University of Alabama, Huntsville, and some of the scientists there, and they said, no, you've actually stumbled upon a theory called universal time theory. And there is a theory as yet unproven, and since they've started the Hadron Collider is really the only way you can test something like this, there is a theory that there is a universal consistent time. And that if you're an outside observer looking at the universe, there is a consistent time. But within that universe, time can travel at different speeds and different rates. It's kind of like an analogy would be looking at an interstate highway and watching the traffic move at different rates on that same highway. And this has been used as a way to explain phenomenon like deja vu, and you're sitting thinking about someone you haven't talked to in 10 years, and suddenly the phone rings, and it's that person on the phone, and you say, well, that was, you know, a premonition or something like that. It could actually be, the way it was explained to me, it could be that the pocket of the space that you're traveling through has encountered an inconsistency in gravity, and you've just briefly slowed down from universal time and then caught right back up. You actually knew you were going to get the phone call. You just haven't in time caught up to that yet. And it raises some interesting things about premonition, about things like that, that it's actually not some supernatural deity putting a thought in your head of something that it, the fact is it's actually already occurred. You're just now catching up to it. And I find that quite fascinating. Have you ever heard anything about this, Brian, or does that make any kind of sense to you whatsoever?
I wanted to scoff until you made that last explanation right there, actually. I always have, it's not a bad explanation, actually, for deja vu. My deja vu theory was always that, you know, if you've been alive for a billion seconds, you know, quite frankly, there's going to be a few that seem familiar. You know what I mean? It just is inevitable that something is going to happen, like, remarkably similar to something that has happened to you before, and it's merely a coincidence, as opposed to being some sort of indication of a larger, some sort of larger theory of time. I always have, you know, I think it's pretty clear that it's possible to travel forward in time, in the sense that, you know, you can put an atomic clock on an airplane, and time is moving at a different rate when you're flying above the Earth than it is when you're on the Earth. And it's very, very small. It's not like if you do a lot of air travel, you're going to be older. But for example, if you got on a spacecraft and left the Earth and traveled at near the speed of light and returned, I mean, you would come back a little bit older, but vast amounts of time would have passed on Earth. So essentially, you went into the future. The big question is, of course, can you go backwards in time? And we've actually got an article on the front page of BrianAlvarez.com right now about a group of researchers who claim that, no, you time only moves in one direction. You cannot go backwards. And what you're explaining is you're not really going back in time. And even if you were, it's a very, very short period. But I mean, like, the idea that, you know, at some point we can travel back and to the days of the dinosaurs or whatever, it's looking unlikely that such a thing is possible. But who knows?
Yeah, and I think too, this theory would only encompass you could only go slightly back, and you wouldn't actually be going back. You would, in your, somehow or another, you would be slowed down, and you would have to catch back up to real time. So you sort of would be in the past, but universal time would actually just be ahead of you. And you know, that's one of the theories about flying saucers and UFOs that have been proposed over the years, is that these aren't extraterrestrial beings at all, but they're in fact time travelers, and that we're only seeing sort of an after image of them moving through time. They can't interact with us, and we can't interact with them, and that's why they appear to be erratic, and no one's been able to make contact with them and whatever, and they disappear off radar or don't appear on radar and things like that, is because they're actually, at some point in the future, traveling back in time, and they can see us, and we can see them, but it's just an energy transfer more akin to like an after image when you look at something bright and then close your eyes and you have the energy imprint on your eyes for a short period of time. It's that sort of thing that we're seeing time travelers. And I forget exactly the scientific explanation behind that, but there's actually been a few books written proposing a scientific explanation for that.
You have, I guess, always been sort of the theory that UFOs are visitors from the future. Is that correct?
I think it's a more valid explanation than... I don't see... One of two things have got to give. Either some extraterrestrial society, and I do believe there are other beings out there in the vastness of the universe. I think the universe is just too vast a place, and that eventually the odds are going to get even on that one. There's got to be just more than us out there just by sheer size of it. But either they're going to have conquered the problem of the speed of light being the speed limit of the universe, either that's got to not be true, and they've had to find some way around that, be it wormholes or bending time. time with gravity or something like that to get there, or there's another explanation, if they even exist at all. It's got to be something like that, because the space is just too vast to travel that long through. I mean, it's just our closest planet, our closest solar neighbor is multiple light years away, so it's just be very difficult, I think, for them to travel that far.
Here's my problem with time traveling UFOs, and even quite frankly, UFOs in general these days. And I don't know. I've been thinking about this for a while. I always, you know, when I was younger, I thought, you know, man, maybe we are being visited and that sort of thing, and maybe we are. I don't know, but. But of late, I've really been thinking about this. The more I read, Jacques Vallée had a new book out about aerial phenomenon through the ages. And the thing about the whole deal is, yes, it is consistent through time that people have seen weird things in the sky. But to me, whenever you get details about what the craft look like or you know, people that claim that they've been abducted, it's always... No matter what era you are in, whatever happens to you is not that technologically advanced. You know, it's always just advanced enough that you can imagine it happening. You know, for example, you know, you never read something from some farmer in the 15th century saw this strange occupant coming out of a vehicle, and the occupant had something that resembled an iPad. You know. You never see that. He's always carrying something that looks like a sickle. Or for example, when Betty and Barney Hill were supposedly abducted, and they asked, you know, where are you from? The aliens showed them a map. A map! They came from light years away, and they're using a map? You know, we don't even use a map nowadays. We've got GPS. We've got a voice that shouts at us if we take a wrong turn. You know, and you hear from people that are abducted in the 20th century, and the craft is always like made of metal, and it's got nuts and bolts. And maybe you hear about a crash saucer, and there are things about it that are a little weird, but it's not like something completely like you can't even imagine it. Like, you know, the stuff that they collected, you crumple it into a ball, and it flattens itself out again. Yeah, it's pretty high tech for 1947, but it's not like something that. You know, you presume that these aliens that traveled, you know, across the interstellar space, you'd think they'd have something a little more advanced, you know, than you crumple it up and it reforms itself. I mean, shouldn't you be advanced enough that if your craft gets hit by lightning, you don't crash? So it's always like, I always think, okay, if these things actually came from the future, I mean, we've talked about this before on the program. You know, 10 years ago, who would have even imagined an iPhone? You know, an iPhone 10 years ago was like... You know, people wouldn't even have imagined that you'd use your phone to get on the internet. Your phone was something that you called people with, and, you know, maybe you communicated with people in a different fashion. You typed instead of called, but people couldn't have imagined an iPhone, you know, 10 years ago. So I don't know, just the idea that you know, these time travelers are technologically advanced enough to travel back in time, yet at the same time, their craft is maybe just a few more years advanced than what people are imagining today. I just, the whole thing going back through the ages, it's just, I don't know. I find it hard to believe that everything is just so, you know, it's, you know, a guy in the first century AD saw a guy on, you know, he was flying in a chariot, for God's sake. A chariot.
Well, let me play devil's advocate here for a moment.
All right.
And then present you a situation where, just to give you a different perspective on this, maybe. And
that's
annoying.
That doesn't sound good.
Yes, that's a warning that I'm going to die imminently. So I go to Seattle, Washington, and find Brian Alvarez in a Starbucks on his iPad. We're having this conversation. I come up behind you, and I whack you in the back of the head. The next thing you know, you have awoken in the middle of a Brazilian rainforest with a tribe that has never had human contact, and they're all standing around you, and you're laying there with your iPhone, your iPad, and you just came out of modern-day Seattle, Washington. You've even got your latte there in your hand. how are they going to describe you? And better yet, what in the hell are you going to do with all that? My advice is probably, or my belief is probably, you're going to go, with all this technology, how do I get out of here? How do I communicate with these people? How did I get here? How do I get back? I've got these paperweights with me now, and these people are looking at you going, what in heaven's name is here before us, and what are these things he has? And how would they describe you, and how would you describe them? And I think it's a little more complicated than I've got all this technology I can get back. You know, you may find yourself, I mean, let's face it, if you've got intergalactic travel and you find yourself in biblical time Earth, you know, good luck with your iPad working. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but at the same time, I mean, yes, if you took a Boeing 747 and you took it back in time and you flew it over some, you know, a primitive tribe, they'd say it's a bird, you know, or a giant. They'd use whatever terminology they have. They couldn't say, oh, it's a 747. They'd say, my God, it's a Thunderbird, or whatever the case might be. But at the same time, I mean, a lot of these reports, I mean, maybe people don't know exactly, you know, sometimes people will try to explain how what the control mechanisms are for a craft. You know, they'll be like, it just seems like they put their hands on it and moved and that sort of thing. And yes, they don't understand that. And they don't really know how to term it. But at the same time, you know, there are things that they do know how to explain. Like, you know, there were chairs. You know, the chairs in the craft were really small. And it's like, really, you're traveling interstellar space and you're sitting in a chair? Just some of this stuff is just like so, it's just so hard for me to believe that you know, again, a map. You know, that is really the best way that they could explain to her where they're from. They had to show her a map. I don't know. I just, you know, some of the things that people can explain are still so primitive.
Yeah, I was trying to look up, and I can't remember. I saw this photograph one time, and actually, as a matter of fact, here it is. Have you ever seen the picture of the airplane built by natives in wherever it was? I just Googled up a picture of it. Okay, here is, it was post-World War II, and the place is, and let me give you, here's how I found it. I Googled wooden airplane built by natives and Googled the images, and one of the images you'll come across is this straw airplane that was built in the 1800s. I'm sorry, not 1800s, obviously. That's post-World War II by natives in, well, without reading the whole article, I don't remember. But anyway, what was happening was NATO, I believe, was dropping relief supplies to a group of natives who had not had previous human interaction. They were an isolated culture. And so all they saw were these metal birds flying over the sky, dropping gifts from heaven down to them. And they actually built a replica of this and began worshiping it once the air drops ceased, praying to this thing to resume dropping them food from the sky. And it's a fascinating story, and the what you just told reminded me of that. But I suggest everybody Google that up and read the story up on it. It's been a long time since I have it. I don't remember all the details, but you just look at this straw wooden airplane, and it's remarkably similar. I mean, you look at it, and immediately you go, that's a propeller-driven airplane. And these natives had built this thing out of memory, and began worshiping it. So do check that out.
In other words, they didn't sculpt a bird.
No, you can look at it. Actually, the exact terms I use, I Googled wooden airplane built by natives. And it's in the some of the first Google images that pop up is this
built
wooden
pine
airplane, and it looks exactly like a propeller-driven airplane. So yeah, is that, you know, it's not a representation of a bird or a dragon or anything like that.
I am Googling that right now for the wooden airplane built by natives.
Yes, and scroll down. It's in the first part. You'll see it immediately, about midways down.
Is it giant?
Yes, I think it is. I think it's like full scale.
Holy God, that thing is big.
Yeah, you see it.
How about that? Well, that's pretty good.
It's a fascinating story that went through, and I wish I could find the original article that went with the story, but it's pretty much exactly what would have happened had UFOs, I think, been visiting Earth in antiquity. You know, again, they wouldn't have necessarily done cave drawings of what they knew. They would have, I think, done what exactly these natives did and made a pretty doggone exact replica of a plane.
Well, again, I do think that many ancient peoples were not given the credit they deserved for being a hell of a lot smarter than people thought they were.
Absolutely.
Well, Carl, before we wrap it up today, let's get some plugs in. Talk a little bit about CarlStern.com, and I'll talk a little bit about BrianAlvarez.com.
Well, CarlStern.com presently redirects to my Facebook page. It's open. You don't have to be a member of Facebook to view it. That's CarlStern.com, Carl with the letter K. And I do host a show dealing with classic wrestling over at WrestlingObserver.com. Do a lot of podcast work. In fact, I just posted a new show over there, so check that out.
And, of course, BrianAlvarez.com is a place to go for this program. If you are listening to this for the first time, head on over there. Check on the past shows link on the left-hand side of the page. We've got a lot of great shows, not only with myself and Carl, but with some guests as well. Nicholas De Leon was on about a month ago talking technology and a lot more. We've had shows on the Illuminati, Bigfoot. Jeff Meldrum, PhD, was on the show talking Bigfoot. That's a great show. They're all up at BrianAlvarez.com, available for you to download, and we'll have a new show up next week as well. So thanks again, Carl. Everybody check out CarlStern.com for more, including photographs of us up at the Georgia Guidestones. And, of course, BrianAlvarez.com as well. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and have a good night.